Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome to the Steve Jones Show as we roll closer to the Big Ten opener for the Nittany Lions. Penn State taking on Rutgers. UMass will be next on the list, and that is a 4 o'clock kick, in case you didn't hear, a 2:30 airtime here on WKOK for the tailgate show. Again, kickoff is set for 4 o'clock there. Latest news from the NFL on the Ray Rice situation is Roger Goodell's comments on CBS News last night that no one in the NFL saw the second video. Now, the question I had to ask is if they find it, but he said to his knowledge, no one in the NFL saw that video. He doesn't exactly know where that video came from. TMZ Sports is the one who actually released it, but they ended up asking for the second tape. His comments after Norm O'Donnell went to deal with domestic violence and attempted to bridge the gap between the league's initial punishment and the response to seeing the second more graphic video of Rice hitting his wife. He said, absolutely, that's why we asked for that second tape, because when we make a decision, we want to have all the information that's available. When we met with Ray Rice and his representatives, it was ambiguous about what really happened. Her follow-up question is what exactly is ambiguous about Jenna Rice laying unconscious on the floor. Well, there was nothing ambiguous about that. That was the result we saw. We didn't know what led up to that. We didn't know the details of that. We asked for that on several occasions. It was unacceptable in and of itself, and we saw on the first tape, and that's why they took the action. He said, albeit insignificant action. And we acknowledge that we took the responsibility for that. I did personally, and I take responsibility for that. What we saw yesterday was extremely clear and graphic and was absolutely necessary for us to take the action we did. I don't know. It sounds a little confusing to me. I mean, there's a lot of backpedaling there. There's a lot of circles being talked around. Listen, let's face it. I don't think there's any of us that think the NFL really handled this the way it should have been handled. And the NFL is now seeing the...
They couldn't have handled it any better. It was really textbook.
I mean, it's almost... Now, I can say this, but it's almost the NCAA school of how to handle things. It's just confusing.
Well, the Ray Rice thing is... All right, let's go back to what we talked about originally on this. And I originally said an 8-game suspension. Now, I actually had people criticize me saying I was too tough. Remember that?
Yeah, I didn't think so. But, yeah, I did. We did get a few comments about that.
Like, too tough what? And I said, look, you have to send a message, you know, to me. So I thought a half season. And remember the other part I said was really important to me. Now, this is going back in time now. I mean, because we hadn't seen the inside of the elevator, right, obviously. But I'm sorry, she didn't faint to get into that position. She was knocked out cold. Okay? He's dragging her out. It's not only that he's dragging her out, but it's how he reacts as well. Like, he just didn't care.
Well, didn't he originally say that she passed out from too much alcohol? I don't know if that's true. I remember reading that somewhere.
I don't know.
Yeah, see, I don't want to say for sure that's what it was, because there are so many stories. I guess the question you have to ask is, the people that were there at the elevator when the door opened, didn't anybody ask a question of what happened?
Well, it depends. I mean, it depends if, you know, how do you get over there. I'm sure somebody probably did ask, hey, what happened here? Just out of curiosity, so they're treating her correctly, you know. But I've heard different scenarios. For example, the NFL, they could have contacted, his attorney had it. His attorney's not going to give the NFL that tape.
No.
What attorney is going to give the NFL a tape that's going to get their guy drummed out of the league?
No.
Hey, I'd say, hey, look, get a subpoena, you know, I'll give it to you. Right? As for the casino, right? They could have gotten it from the casino. Yes, they could have. I hear people say, well, TMZ got it. Excuse me, how in the heck do you think TMZ got the video? How?
Well,
number one, I mean, people have to start using some common sense here. A, they paid for it.
Right, that's the big one.
Okay? Okay, and B, the casino is out of business.
That's number two. Yes, there's somebody at the casino in security that is probably without a job now, or was at the time, and found themselves with an opportunity for a payday.
It's not my job to defend the league. Right? You know, and it's not my job to defend Roger Goodell. I'm highly critical of how Roger Goodell on day one. I mean, highly critical on day one how he handled this. Okay? So, but there has to be some common sense. If they say, we didn't see the video, I've heard so many people now say they could have gone to his attorney. And I sit back and say to myself, what attorney is going to give the NFL a tape of their client knocking their fiance, their then fiance, out in the what attorney's going to do that? Okay, who? Right? I mean, if you're sitting there as the attorney for Ray Rice, you're not going to say, "Hey, here you go." I kick him out of the league. Here, have you go. He's his attorney. Not going to do that. There's attorney-client privilege. Hey, the prosecutor. To them, the police wasn't going to give it to them. And as for the casino, they could just go to the casino. True, they could. But you notice TMZ didn't just get it from the casino. They didn't get it from the casino until after they went to business and bought it. Okay? That's all this seems to be lost in the very easy, convenient, this is how they could have got. This is the NFL. They have connections with Homeland Security. It's true, they do. But this was a little different animal, especially in a criminal investigation. So they should have just gone to his attorney. Okay, what self-respecting attorney is going to say, hey, here you go.
Yeah, what's next? Go to the agent next? Let's go to Ray Rice's agent for the information.
Hey, here's the tape. We got a tape. We got tapes of some other stuff at parties, too. You want to see those? Yeah? Yeah.
I just thought in looking at the bits, and I didn't see the whole interview, but I saw the bits and pieces of it. It didn't help Roger Goodell's case at all. I mean, it didn't help, not case, but image. It didn't help his image or the NFL's image at all with this situation, that interview.
No, with Norm O'Donnell?
Yeah.
No, it didn't.
It was like, why bother doing it if you're only going to do more damage?
Well, he's the commissioner, and he's expected to get up there and handle himself in these situations like this. They have not... You look at how this has been handled all the way through by different entities. John Harbaugh, the Ravens, the players, Goodell. From the time the two-game suspension was announced. From the time the two-gamer was announced. I sat back and I said to myself, I don't get what I'm watching here. The entire time, I didn't get it. Because remember, John Harbaugh was in praise of Ray Rice. The Ravens were in praise of Ray Rice. The teammates in praise of Ray Rice. Right? You know, Goodell saying it's appropriate and so forth. And I sat back and I thought, I would be a little more cautious with what's going on here.
But I kind of want to know what Ray said to the commissioner, though.
I don't care what he said. I don't care.
Well, right there, he has a chance to redeem himself, okay. to almost redeem yes. himself in, Kevin, that instant, Kevin, in that incident.
Kevin, the only part I saw was her being attempted to be dragged out, okay? And then him being rather lackadaisical and uncaring about the whole thing. And I said 8 games.
No, I agree with you. But what I'm saying is when that comes out, he sits.
I don't hear from him.
Well, he sits with the commissioner. But he sits with the commissioner, and there's an opportunity now to have some redemption afterwards. Because that's what everybody's saying. Well, is he going to have a chance to reinstate with the league? You know what? He had that chance He had that chance to come clean right away before the tape came out and say, listen, this is what happened. It was wrong. I made a mistake. It won't happen again. He didn't. He didn't come clean about it quick enough to me.
Well, true, he did not. At the same time, I'm sure he was stifled in what he could say until he had everything straightened out legally in New Jersey. So,
but that's I don't know that that's the case with the commissioner. That's what I mean. And if he
they didn't meet with the commissioner until June, which is after the legalities were solved.
Right.
And look, you're trying to save yourself. She obviously went in there. She's trying to save him because he was due, I think, $6.5 million a year. So I understand they're trying to save and protect their livelihood. I understand that because he was not going to be cut. He was going to be on the team and the whole thing. And until this elevator thing came out that showed the inside of the elevator, he was going to get the money for this year. So, I mean, that's, you know, and she's upset and she's mad at the media and the whole thing. Well, guess what? I have bad news for you, okay? The media didn't hit you. He did. Okay? I know she's upset. She's the victim. But I told the story on the show about the house two down for me growing up. And they fought all the time. I mean, it's just like every night, you're like, you just roll your eyes in the summer, like, oh my goodness. Right? And then one day, he was out there with a broom chasing her and whacking at her with a broom while we're playing baseball. And, well, basketball. And all of a sudden, seeing this, one of the guys runs over and he tackles him. Right? She grabs the broom as we're running over and she starts hitting him for tackling her and screaming, get off my husband, get off my husband. And they tried to have him arrested. And it was an eye-opening moment for me about spousal abuse. You would think it would be, thank you for saving me, and it was 180. She grabbed the broom and started hitting Phil, right, and then called the police on Phil. And all of us as witnesses had to say, no, this is what happened. I feel awful for the police who come into a situation like that and say, okay, now tell me what happened here. And they're trying to sort out what did and didn't happen. But that was one of those eye-opening moments, like, wow. That's why, because I've heard people say, how could Janae Palmer go in and say and plead for her husband's case? Well, I saw it in a violent case where a guy stopped violence against her, and she turned on the guy.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, got to go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday. By the way, the State College Spikes did win the New York Penn League Championship last night for the first time ever. A six-run first inning normally is the accelerator to a trophy.
It's usually a plus, yeah.
Yeah. So they won 11-2 last night and get their first ever title. So it's great news for them.
Do you get a jacket?
Oh, I have no idea. I got to call the game. I know that. No, that's what I do.
I just wondered if you got a jacket or, you know, another piece of jewelry to leave on your counter, on your dresser.
Well, they get rings, I think.
Nice.
Yeah, they get rings, I think. So it's good for them. Yeah, you know, they deserve it. They earned it. So I'm happy for them. It's well done. The Steelers play tomorrow night against the Baltimore Ravens.
I may have to take a nap tomorrow afternoon.
Well, it's the 8:30 game tomorrow night. It's the first game on the CBS NFL package for Thursday that will also be simulcast by NFL Network. Steelers won their opener as they beat the Cleveland Browns 30-27 Sunday and Sean Sweezum's field goal at the wire. Bengals beat the Ravens, and we know, of course, about the Ravens' problems this week surrounding Ray Rice. Jeff Hartman joins us from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. Jeff, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, thanks to be here. Thanks for having me.
Jeff, that certainly was an interesting ride on Sunday. So let's, if you don't mind, I'd like to break it into two parts. What did you see across the board in the first half that made you walk away and say, okay, you know, regardless of the fact it's the Browns, you know, this could be a pretty good football team?
I definitely think that in the first half, you can point to both the offense and the defense. I think a lot of people just point to Ben Roethlisberger throwing for almost 300 yards in the first half. Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown and Marcus Wheaton making big plays is like what to hang their hat on the first half. But in the first half, the defense did their job. They stopped the run. They were able to get some pressure on Hoyer. They confused him a little bit with the Laveau 3-4 scheme. And then in the second half, well, it all unraveled. But I think what you can hang your hat on is the fact that as a team, in all three phases of the game, including special teams, they played extremely well. And I think that's what, for me, as a fan and someone that covers the team, I look at that as like a stepping stone for them to move on into next week.
Jeff, you said in the second half it all unraveled. So as you watched it, specifically, what did you think unraveled?
I think that both offense and defense, more on the offense than the defense, in my opinion, they got away with what was working. Ben Roethlisberger, they deployed a lot of five wide receiver sets, multiple different looks. They run the no huddle well. He was mixing up the run and the pass extremely well. And then they got into the same old Pittsburgh Steelers with the lead. Todd Haley likes to do run, run, pass. And, you know, it just doesn't always work. So they got away with what was successful in the first half, and it wasn't successful in the second half. Defensively, it just seemed like the Pittsburgh defense thought that, I don't know if they thought that the Browns, just being the Browns, were going to fold, but they were not prepared for that no-huddle attack. They looked winded, they looked gassed at times, and they looked downright confused, in my opinion, at times.
It was, you know, obviously a warm day, but back to the offense for a moment. In your experience of covering the National Football League, Jeff, in some ways, I felt like I saw some of the same thing with San Francisco-Dallas, that the 49ers got out to a lead in the second half, just reined it in, played the clock, and the score ended up a little bit closer than really the game, and the Cowboys actually ended up outgaining the 49ers. Is that actually a tendency in the league that once they get to a certain spot, they do rein it in a bit?
I think the teams like to do that. I think the teams wish they had the capabilities of doing that. Pittsburgh, you look at that offensive line, and this is just speaking of the Steelers, that front seven, you know, you should be able to have the push to be able to run the ball twice, get enough yardage, and then if you have to put the ball in the air again or maybe run it again, you would be able to have a third and short situation. I think a lot of NFL teams, not many, maybe you look at the high-powered offenses with NFL teams, most teams are just going to want to be able to play the clock like you referred to and not want to risk interceptions, turnovers that are going to allow that team to get back in. The problem is, Pittsburgh tried that. They're up 27-3, and because they weren't able to get first downs, they essentially kept turning the ball over in form of punting.
We're with Jeff Hartman from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com after the Steelers' 30-27 win. How did you feel about the final 4 minutes of the game, Jeff, and how the Steelers handled it on both sides of the ball?
The sense of urgency, you could definitely, you could feel it from watching in your living room. You could see that the defense kind of realized that the offense isn't doing it, we got to get a stop. And, you know, players have commented after the game that Tomlin and Dick LeBeau had pulled them aside and said, look, we need to keep it on this side of the field to give us good field position afterwards. And then the offense went back to what was working in the first half. They were running the no huddle. It was a little bit more hurry up. Marcus Wheaton stepped up big time, and it really did seem like they kind of refocused back into the game, and it just makes you wonder what went wrong with the third quarter, where they were outscored. They didn't score any points. I think they were outscored 14-0, I believe. So you have to wonder to yourself what happened in the third quarter mentally. They got them out of the game, but in that last 4 minutes, they kind of got right back to where they were in the first half. We were able to shut them down on defense and able to move the ball on offense.
It's one thing in college, for example, when they talk about a series. For example, Penn State's going to play Rutgers this week, and you look at the lifetime series between the two. You know, but they haven't played each other since the 90s, so you know that's historical but has no relevance to today's players. But in the NFL, for example, the Steelers and Browns play each other twice a year, and the Steelers have had nothing but success against them. Was there any talk of maybe, hey, they built up the big lead and complacency set in because, hey, it's the same old Browns and the same old Steelers?
No player would ever admit to it, but I guarantee that's exactly what was going through a lot of the players' minds on offense and on defense, and I wouldn't even be surprised if some coaches kind of let that seep into their brains. Even fans alike, especially fans, are looking at that as a 27-3 halftime lead. And you're thinking of just, you know, sitting back, putting it in cruise control, and let's just look ahead on a short week to the Baltimore Ravens coming up on Thursday night. And historically, the Cleveland Browns have been really bad since they re-entered the NFL in the late 90s, I think 99. But this team is not horrible. And that's what I wanted to make sure that I tell everyone that asked me about the game, is that the Browns are not horrible. They are a team that has compiled many, many high-end first, number one draft picks, and eventually some of them are going to stick. But I do think that the players, especially the veterans that have seen the Browns fold time and time again, definitely let that seep into their mind. And although they never admitted, I guarantee it was there.
Jeff, this is obviously an odd week. I mean, short week Thursday. It's the Ravens. Ray Rice was not going to play in the game anyway, but now, after everything that's happened, he's no longer with the team to begin with. So there are going to be a lot of questions outside of what the football game happens to be, and more coverage probably outside of what the football game is going to be. How have you seen the Steelers handle that part of it? Because Ray Rice will be a primary discussion in a short week.
He already has been. I know players yesterday, our own Behind the Steel Curtain contributors were in the locker room and gotten a lot of good player quotes about Troy Polamalu, spoke about how he had viewed the video. William Gay, it's been very publicized that his mother was killed in a domestic violence. In the grand scheme of things, this pressure is mainly going to be on the Baltimore Ravens. In a short week, having such really insane news. I mean, yesterday was such a crazy day if you follow the NFL in terms of how everything unfolded, from the video being released to then obviously the sanctions being handed down by the NFL. I think that the Steelers can kind of look at it and say, look, let's just handle our business. They might have to answer questions, they might not. But in a short week, I think it's going to have even more of a factor than if it were the game were being played on Sunday rather than Thursday.
Jeff, how do NFL teams handle a short week going from a Sunday to a Thursday? They have to do it often. I mean, everybody has to do it once a year at minimum. Nobody is required to do it twice in a season. But when they have to do it, how do they do it?
Typically what happens on a regular week, they play on Sunday, Monday's off, Tuesday they come in, they really practice on Wednesday. And that's kind of all accelerated with the short week. So Sunday they played, players reported on Monday, they probably watched film, got treatment, stuff of that nature. They had a late walkthrough yesterday. Or I'm sorry, they're going to have a late walkthrough on Tuesday. Then Wednesday, they have their final walkthrough before they travel to Baltimore for the Thursday night game. So it's just kind of, you look at the injury report, you look at guys that are kind of banged up that are listed as questionable, which every single Steeler injury right now is listed as questionable as of yesterday's practice. And so you kind of wonder whether they're going to be able to play. I mean, Thursday to Sunday, that's a pretty big difference. So everything is just kind of pushed up. Everything is kind of accelerated, and that's how most NFL teams handle it. And Pittsburgh still has to travel. That's one thing people forget. Baltimore doesn't have to go anywhere. Pittsburgh still has to travel.
One final question, Jeff, then I'll let you go. Baltimore has become a great rival with Pittsburgh. It's a division game. It may be week two, but being a division game and a chance to go 2-0. To you, what are some of the important factors that we should watch for in this game that could swing it one way or the other?
I think that if you're looking at this team, both teams going up head-to-head, you know, that's such a story history since they've been a part of the NFL in Baltimore. Pittsburgh's run defense. Okay, last year they gave up 115 yards a game in 2013, and then in week one they gave up 128 to the Cleveland Browns, and that was when Ben Tate, their starting running back, had to leave the game due to injury. It doesn't bode well against a team like the Ravens, who even without Ray Rice still has capable running backs. And you want to put the pressure on Flacco. That would be my key number two. It's all going to be on the defensive, yes. I think Pittsburgh offensively is going to get a score on anybody in the NFL. You name the defense, they're going to get to put up points. They're dynamic, if you ask me. But defensively, can you stop the run and prevent the big play while putting pressure on the quarterback? If they can do that, I really like their chances of going into M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore and winning. If they can't, it could be a long day, and they might be coming back to Pittsburgh 1-1.
It was an absolute pleasure on my part. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Jeff Hartman, BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. Kevin will talk about his favorite team in a moment as they get ready for Sarah's favorite team as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Just like the Steelers' defense, it stopped playing in the second part of that.
Yeah, that was great. That was terrific. That was
terrific. It wasn't supposed to happen.
But at the same time, and from the tech, there we go. Same time, you were interested in what he said about the defense getting tired.
I noticed that too. I thought it was just, you know, maybe the way I was looking at it because I was getting a little upset with the defensive play. But I saw a lot of hands on the hips in that, I don't know, it was probably midway through the third quarter when Cleveland started to run a little more up-tempo. They just did not keep up with it very well.
No, they didn't. Part of it's the heat, part of it's the humidity, part of it's also age in certain spots, too, don't you think?
Well, I know what spot you're talking about. I didn't see a problem there. I think the corners were soft again. I think there's still issues there at corner.
Yeah, I think so. Well, you know, first of all, there's no Josh Gordon. The guy that can stretch the field, maybe make a difference for Brian Hoyer, and so forth. I mean, the Browns' offense is not great.
That's not a prolific offense, right?
The best player they have is Joe Thomas on offense. I think it's a fair assessment, right?
Yeah, I would say
Joe Thomas.
So. Yeah, I would.
Joe Thomas, and he's their left tackle. Now he's an incredible left tackle. But he's also the best offensive player they have with Gordon out. You probably would like to have your best player be Roethlisberger. Roethlisberger's the best player on offense for the Steelers. Joe Thomas is the best player on offense for the Browns. Now, it's great having an elite left tackle, which he is. I mean, that's the backside protection. You can run behind that guy. He's a Pro Bowler. So, that's huge. It's like having when the Ravens had Jonathan Ogden, like when the Bengals had Anthony Munoz, that kind of player. But the difference was those guys were surrounded by other people. The Browns don't have enough other people on offense. Now, defensively, I was impressed that the Steelers scored 30, especially 27 the first half, because I think the Browns defensively actually have a chance to be pretty good this year.
They really moved the ball with ease in the first half. But yeah. you talked about the Browns offense. What concerned me the most in the second half, and I believe it was the second half, I don't think Ben Tate played in the entire second half. I mean, I don't think, and that would be the one guy that I would say on this, you know, offense from a skills position that would give me some concern. But I don't think he right. played the entire second half, and the secondary still couldn't cover the receivers.
Right. Now, the next part is they've got the Ravens. Let's see now when they see Joe Flacco, what Flacco can do against them, especially as the night wears on. Flacco and Brian Hoyer are not in the same category as a quarterback.
No. As I said, though, Johnny Manziel looked excited.
Right.
And then the second half, right. he was like, oh, well, I'm not getting in this game.
Well, Hoyer's a good quarterback. I'm not saying he's a lousy quarterback. I don't think he's a lousy quarterback. I actually think he's a good NFL quarterback. Flacco is two steps up from that.
Agreed.
Right. So that's going to be an even more severe test for the Steelers going into this game tomorrow night. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be talking with NBA Hall of Famer Rick Barry, one of the true great players of all time, Golden State Warriors, also played for a period of time with the Nets, the Virginia Squires, the Oakland Oaks, and the ABA. And, of course, you see his sons all the time, everywhere. His sons were active in college basketball, the pros, Brent Berry, so forth. It's quite a basketball dynasty and the basketball's version of the Mannings in some way. We'll have Rick Berry on the show tomorrow. We're also going to have a beat writer for Rutgers on tomorrow at 3:15 to talk about the matchup with Penn State and Rutgers. Coming up on Friday, Mark Silverman, the president of BTN, is going to join us. John U. Bacon, the author of Fourth and Long, The Fight for the Soul of College Football, is going to be on. So we have plenty going on here the rest of the week on the show to get you ready for tomorrow night's NFL game and to get you ready for Penn State and Rutgers. Also, a lot of high school football on tap. Coming up Friday night, the Sunbury family of Sunbury stations will be carrying four games coming up on Friday night. Shikalimi's looking to bounce back.
Well, technically three games because you can hear two sides
right,
of no, one game.
Yeah, right. That's right. You'll be able to hear each team's broadcast, the one you prefer.
Yeah, the Selins Grove's at Shikalimi in the rivalry game of the week with Shikalimi on WKOK for that broadcast and Eagle 107 with the Selins Grove broadcast.
Damn, looking forward to that Eagle 107 broadcast.
They do a nice job. I'm a big fan.
Very informative. Follow the ball.
They do. Yeah. They know the players on the field. It helps.
When Shikalimi scores, I go, touchdown, Shikalimi, instead of touchdown, Shikalimi.
I only got to say it once last week. Imagine what it's going to be like this week. You know what? I do know what the problem was in the here we go. I do know what the problem was in the second half of the Steeler game, though. Do you know what the problem was?
You were watching and not sitting in the basement?
No, I did. I watched the whole game because I said it's a new year. It's a new year. I'm going to watch the whole game. And when the first half went through, I thought, wow, this is going to be a year where I can actually watch the entire game. I got comfortable at halftime. And just before the second half kickoff, I started to take off the Polamalu jersey. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to leave it on. I think taking it off part of the way changed the entire karma of the second half. I just should have left it on in the first place. You're shocked that I figured out the problem. It was sad.
I can't wait to tell Mike Tomlin.
It wasn't as bad as he thought. It was simply a situation of me taking off the jersey.
Do the police know you were trying to take your shirt off?
I was in the house.
That doesn't
matter. The doors were shut. As I recall, the air conditioner was on because it was a little steamy.
I'm not going to get into that.